Welcome to the Stabbin' Stylists Podcast. I'm Randa.
And I'm Ashley.
We are just two stylists who love true crime and hair, and we're going to tell you about both.
This is a true crime podcast. These stories may be disturbing to some. Listener discretion is advised. Some people do need to shampoo their hair every day, and if that's you, that's completely fine. No hate to you. Your color probably won't last as long, but as long as you're taking care of it, more power to you. You can't actually really train your hair to go longer between shampoos. You're either realizing that you're shampooing your hair too often and found your sweet spot, or your hair, once it's greasy, there's only so, not greasy, that's not the real word, but oily, there's only so oily it can get. After a while, it's going to be maxed out oiliness, which is normally when you're going to shampoo.
Right.
So you can't really train it. Your sebaceous glands that produce your sweat, that's genetic. That's just,
they just do the thing.
Right. There's nothing you can do to make it stop producing oil. There are different products you can use. Like, you might be using something that's just too heavy for your hair. And then, yeah, if you switch off of that, you're going to be like, wow, I can go a lot longer because this product that I'm using now isn't as heavy on my hair. Right.
Speaking of which, generally speaking, like a white or a milky colored shampoo is going to be more hydrating and more heavy than a clear shampoo is.
That makes sense.
Just FYI.
That makes sense. And if you notice that your hair is getting super greasy super quickly, try putting conditioner just on your ends. You might be putting it too far up. Or we've talked about this multiple times. Shampoo, rinse, repeat. You should shampoo your hair two times.
And sometimes you do need a clarifying treatment.
Yeah. My hair's been curly for days. I'll probably have to shampoo it at least three times. So yes, clarify. If it gets too oily, you really should be clarifying it anyway. And we've said this before, but we'll say this again. Don't come to your appointment with super, super oily hair, because then the color's not going to penetrate through.
Nope.
A little bit oily, that's fine. But if you're like sticking together,
yeah,
too oily, sis.
Or dry shampoo. Don't come up in there with dry shampoo in your head.
Or people will be like, I have the powder on my roots. And it's like, please, sis, don't do that.
I'm begging.
Please, I get it. You don't want your gray to show. So,
anywho.
Trigger warning, this episode contains graphic crime.
We're going to talk about the Battle of Athens, which I don't know if this is going to be a history episode or a true crime episode or both. A little bit of both, kind of.
Two things can be true.
Yes. So, before we get into it, people are like, what is the Battle of Athens? It's not like an actual war battle. But in 1946, the Athens, Tennessee had the Battle of Athens, which is actually the only successful armed rebellion in America since the American Revolution.
You don't say.
Isn't that cool? First off, let's just go on and get our villain of the story out of the way. He's Paul Cantrell. And he was
born... I was expecting that head.
I know, seriously. Or a Biggs. Biggs comes into play, though. So he was born in 1892 in Etowah.
Okay.
And he came from a pretty wealthy family. He and his siblings actually owned a lumber company, a motor company, the local water, light, and power utility companies.
Oh.
And a bank based in Etowah.
So, I mean, they're big shit in Etowah.
Yeah. They had money. They said there was only a few like business deals in McMinn County that he didn't have his hands in.
Okay.
From the Civil War on, McMinn's political offices were mainly held by Republicans.
Okay.
But the 1930 Tennessees became more under control from the Democrat Party because of E.H. Crump, who we talk about in the Birch Biggs episode, who really ran a political machine in Tennessee, and he really got a lot of Democrats in there. So Thanks to Crump's backing, Cantrell ran the Democratic candidate for sheriff in 1936. At this time, in these little southern towns, the sheriff was really considered to have more political power than like the mayor. The sheriff was the end all be all. So when he was elected into office, the citizens were actually a little bit suspicious of voter fraud.
Okay.
But they never really had the evidence behind it. And they call it the vote grab of 1936.
The vote grab.
The vote grab. Pretty quickly, he and his deputies mastered how to abuse the fee system. And they would arrest people on trumped up charges like drunk in public to have to pay a fee, a fine, and they would get kickbacks off the fine.
Mm-hmm.
This is the same thing that Birch Biggs did.
Right.
Cantrell's guys were so shameless about their abuse of power, they would stop buses passing through the county, drag out the passengers, and tell them that they need to pay a fine for their just fake drunkenness that they were making up.
What?
On a good weekend, he and his guys arrested up to 115 people.
Their corruption went even past this fee abuse, right? Which, duh. They allowed roadhouses, brothels, and gambling dens to operate freely, but obviously, like, charged them a hefty protection fine.
Yeah, all the way in the pockets.
So at the end of 1942, Cantrell ran for election of a member of the state legislature, and he put his chief deputy, Pat Mansfield, into power. And I didn't say he was elected because, I mean, he was elected, but technically, actually, I think it's just kind of Cantrell said this is who's next, so that's who was next. So Mansfield was even worse than Cantrell was.
Oh, okay.
By this point, America had joined World War II, and, you know, Tennessee had 300,000 volunteers leave to join the war. McMinn was no different from the rest of Tennessee, and 3,000 men from McMinn County went and joined the armed forces. So, and that was actually a tenth of the population of McMinn County at the time.
Oh, really?
Lacking the police manpower, because, you know, some of these men went off to the war, Mansfield starts hiring ex-convicts as his deputies and doing, like, basically no background check on these people at all.
Okay.
So by this point, he is even suppressing the local newspaper and controlling personnel decisions at the school. So in 1940, 1942, and 1944, the residents of McMinn County actually were, like, reaching out to the federal authorities, asking them for an investigation of election fraud. But no action was ever taken. So
they're just continuing to get away with it.
Just letting them get away with it. So the end of the war happens and the McMinn GIs come home, and they did not come home to a pleasant welcome. The veterans, who were used to having, you know, a few drinks without being bothered by anybody, Mansfield and his gang, aka deputies, aka ex-convicts, knew that these veterans had all this money from being paid for being in the war. So they start shaking them down, beating them, and arresting them for the same trumped up drunken public charges.
It's not very American of you, sir.
And obviously, the veterans don't like this. They're like, absolutely not. So they band together, and in the early months of 1946, they start holding meetings, being like, hold on, this is happening to all of us. There are 5 positions up for grabs in upcoming elections.
Let's take them.
Let's get it. They were having to secretly meet, too, because you got to think, if Cantrell or Mansfield found out about this, they're going to make their life living hell.
Oh, yeah.
In May, 2 months before the August election, they went public with it and started, you know, campaigning, essentially. They were distinctly nonpartisan. 3 of their candidates were Republican and 2 were Democrat. They did not care about red and blue, Democrat, Republican. They cared about right and wrong and having people not corrupt in power. So,
how dare they?
Right. So Cantrell attempted to sabotage the veterans' chance of winning the election. And the county only had 1 voter registration book for veterans. The book goes missing. So their poll tax stuff gone. Veterans were also arrested and their poll tax receipts were taken.
Because one thing to say back then, too, you had to have a poll tax receipt to be able to vote.
That was voter registration.
Right. So basically, you paid a little tax, you got this sheet, and this is how you voted. And that's one thing that, like, Burge, Cantrell, all these men used to do, is to get people to vote for them. They would pay their voter tax or their poll tax for them to do it. So then they start taking these people's poll tax sheets because then they can't even vote without it. So the veterans ask the FBI to send in election monitors to ensure that they get a fair election, but they don't hear anything back from them. And so they start a militia of 60 men led by a man named Bill White, and they nicknamed themselves the Fighting Bunch.
Oh.
So what their main goal was to help prevent violence and fraud as the election came up.
Okay.
So they're not the only ones getting together a group, though. Cantrell is like, you know, this is not going to be a good thing, and he's getting paranoid. So he has Mansfield hire 200 out-of-state deputies to help oversee the protection, right? And normally there's no more than 15 deputies in McMinn County. So now they have, like, over 200. So election day comes August 1st, and the veterans sent two telegrams, one to the governor and one to the attorney general, asking for help for a fair election, but they never hear anything back on both of them. Voters turned up early and in numbers for the election. They're ready to go.
Yeah.
And it did not take long for things to get ugly.
Shocking.
They had armed deputies at every precinct. And veteran poll watchers were intimidated, beaten, and arrested. They would only allow a few people in at a time to vote to, like, keep the lines really long so that people would just, like,
give up and go home.
Tom Gillespie, a 60-year-old black man whose parents were denied the right to vote at this polling station, had started to go in to try to vote himself. The deputy said some very nasty slurs to him and told him that he could not vote there. And he said, no, like, this is where I'm going to vote. I have my poll tax receipt. I'm allowed to vote. So the deputy beat him with brass knuckles and threw him out of the polling station.
Are you kidding me?
But Tom was like, no, this has not happened. So he stood up and he walked back in and he said, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to vote. And the deputy pulled out his gun and shot him.
Let me guess, nothing happened.
Oh, it's still going. This is just at the beginning of the day. So a few minutes later, a veteran poll worker named Bob Harrell observed a young girl without a poll tax who was only 17-year-old below the voting age that was voting. When he protested and was like, hey, you know, no, this isn't okay, a deputy beat him with a club and kicked him repeatedly while he was on the ground, where he was dragged unconscious to the jail. And two deputies took the liberty of taking his wallet, which had the photographs of his family that essentially got him through the war. So Cantrell's men closed the polls early. They tampered with ballots. They intimidated voters. They were doing anything they could to win this election. And it's worth noting that the mayor and all of the city officials were away on vacation at the time.
Surprising.
The veterans gathered in a garage in downtown Athens, and they're losing hope, but Bill White is like, no, we're the Fighting Bunch. Like, we are the Fighting Bunch. We are not going to surrender. Yes. So the remaining guys got themselves together, and they're like, all right, let's go break into the fucking armory.
Oh.
So they all get in the back of Bill's truck, and they go break into the armory, and they grab guns and ammo. They grabbed at least 70 rifles.
At least 70.
Yes. With two ammo bandoliers, which I'm guessing is like the trunks full of ammo. I'm not sure, but they grabbed two of those too. So by 9 p.m., Cantrell, Mansfield, and 50 deputies had locked themselves in the jail to count the votes in private. And that it had been demanded that they vote them in public, but they were like, no. So it's hard to pinpoint exactly how the conflict started, but Bill White takes credit and says, okay, I fired the first shot. Veterans took up positions on nearby rooftops and rained fire down on the jail. Any deputies outside immediately ran inside, and the veterans fired on the building for hours. But Cantrell and his followers were like straight up not surrendering. They're just like hold themselves up in the jail while actively being shot at. They're like, you know, this is, we're shooting these guns. They're not coming out. So the veterans made Molotov cocktails and hurled them at the jail. Ineffective, not doing anything. So they're like, we need something stronger.
Not stronger.
So the some of them broke off to retrieve some dynamite from the county storehouse.
Good Lord.
By 2:30 a.m., they returned with the dynamite. Before they could use it, though, an ambulance pulled up to the jail. And they assumed that, you know, somebody was wounded inside, but it was all a ploy. Cantrell and Mansfield, like, jumped inside and sped off as fast as they could.
So forced them.
Once the ambulance had departed, the veterans began throwing taped together sticks of dynamite.
Lord,
they damaged the jail and nearby cars. So it was a 6-hour firefight between the two. After some riots and violent protests, you know, flipping over police cars, all that stuff, mm-hmm. It was over. While there were many wounded, nobody actually died that night.
Wow.
6 of the 12 ballot boxes were disposed of due to tampering by Cantrell. Mm-hmm. And the remaining 6 showed a clear victory for the veterans in all 5 of the offices that they were trying to get.
I know that's right.
Including the position for sheriff. They had a meeting and they elected a committee to preserve law and order in like an armed militia case. And in case Cantrell tried to retake the town, but he never came back. And the only person with charges against them following the Battle of Athens was the man who shot Tom.
Good.
So, yeah, that's like kind of true crime, kind of a little bit history, but like it really goes in. I don't feel like I can tell all the other corruption stories I've been on lately without telling the story of the Battle of Athens because I never had heard of it before.
No, I had no idea.
So, yeah. That is the time that the World War II vets said, absolutely not here. So and they took
we're
over.
We're tired of this.
Yep. And it's been, I'm pretty sure, Republican County since then.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that was the Battle of Athens. I hope my dad listens to this episode. He'll really enjoy it.
Don't whistle in the woods at night.
Bye, y'all.